You're listening to Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters Hump of the Week 7 at 7 archive interview with Mark McCauley of Kasumi Hair Salon.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and all my fellow Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters. Welcome to another edition of the Hump of the Week 7 at 7. As you can see, I'm in Dublin City Centre, just off Molesworth Street here, where our government building's the back, and these boys each side aren't waiting around for me. I think maybe the tarnishes in there waiting for me after me writing them a lovely letter. You might have a nice cup of coffee ready for me. But these guys are obviously waiting for somebody else protested. But just behind, no, not behind me, in front of me here, is one of my earliest mentors in hairdressing. A rock star of the hairdressing industry, and is Mr. Mark McCauley, owner of and creator of the brand that is Kasumi. Mark's one of the earliest influences I had in hairdressing. Without a doubt, one of the most creative hair cutters I ever came across. And probably still to this day, still can cut. I don't think your eyes have gone yet, Mark. So I'm assuming you can still cut as you go. Mark leads a team for the last 25 years. The team has probably gone, it's 30 at the moment, but it's probably gone up and gone down, depending on how things roll in our industry. I'm 35 years in hairdressing, so I'd have to say, being nice, I'm going to say he's in it a few years longer than me. So that, even though he probably is older than me in his head, in his body, not, you know what I mean? Mark has been on both sides of the fence. He's been in his early career, he left, headed off to London and became a senior educator for L'Oreal. Currently, he's still a lead educator for Redken. This man has passion beyond doubt when it comes to what he believes in. And I'm sure by the end of this 7 and 7, you're going to find out what he believes in. you know, it's just great to have so many good friends. But this is one of my friends that goes back to the beginning and my earliest mentors of himself and Paul when I was just a rough lad, you know what I mean, coming in off from a building site and showing me the pure art of what is hairdressing in cutting and colouring, which at the time in the 80s was really starting to emerge as the force and where our industry was going. So, Mark, welcome to Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters 7 at 7. Been a while waiting for you, but I got you.
Well, listen, the check arrived, so thanks a million. I really appreciate it. I'm sure the other colleagues in our industry didn't ask for any money, but you know how it is. Things are tough. So really appreciate it.
It's also between flying out and doing Joe Elliott's hair or Greg.
Always got to hang with Greg. Always got to hang with Greg.
We have done both. We've been in Madison Square Garden with both, yeah. You know?
So exactly.
I know your story. I know it so well, but I just want everybody to hear it because you're a born bred hairdresser. So tell us, why did you choose hairdressing as a career, Mark?
I actually didn't choose hairdressing. And that's being quite honest. The weirdest thing is that I've actually grown up with hairdressing all my life. My mother had salons. I would leave primary school and go and do my homework in the back of the salon with some of the staff. When I went to secondary school, I'd be in the salon after school, again, doing homework. Again, my mum probably wouldn't finish work until 6 to maybe 7 some nights. So I'd be there after school from about 4 o'clock doing homework and then basically heading home. So really hairdressing didn't really come into it until I think I was about 15 at the time, and we got an option in school to basically do a week's work experience. And I thought, this is the perfect opportunity for me to spend a week in bed. So my cue there was, sign up, tell them I was going to work in my mum's salon for a week and basically stay in bed. So unfortunately, what ended up happening then was she knew exactly what I was at because she pretty much knew everything that I was at anyway. So the first morning I was supposed to start work in her salon, she had arranged me to go and work in one of the very large city center salons in the middle of Derry. And so I was kicked out of bed at 7 o'clock in the morning. Ended up in this strange environment at 9 o'clock on the Monday morning, or I think it could have been, yeah, it was a Monday morning. And basically it was for about the first few hours, it was, you know, I was comfortable in salons because I'd already been in my mom's salon, but this was different. I mean, the girls were, you know, they were, it was a different
rock and roll, Mark.
It was a different level to the girls who were working in my own mum's salon. No, in saying that, we, you know, a part-timer when I was a kid, believe it or not, was Dana, because her older sister was actually a stylist in my mum's salon. So there you go. And funny enough, she's called into me whenever she was running in the presidential election. She called into me a few times in Molesworth Street. So
I'd love to meet around for that. Mark, match made in heaven.
So to be quite honest, the idea that I had any interest in hairdressing was I had no thought in my head. As I say, the whole idea was to get a week off school, which I was always happy to do. Never really had a great affinity with authority, as you well know, Gregor. So you can imagine how my relationship with some of my teachers were. wasn't great. So getting a bit of time off school was great. But here I was, ended up in a salon for a week. Absolutely loved it. Loved the crack. Even though most of the crack for the first week was actually directed at me, you know, being sent to the chemist for, let's just say, lady products that the staff thought was the funniest thing in the world, and at least one a day. So they would pick a different one every day, and I'd be left standing in the middle of a crowded chemist asking for what it was.
Yeah. Not what a gent would be what you need.
You know what I mean? Remember what we used to do to assistants, you know, send them out for a bag of highlights and stuff like that.
Yeah, the long stand.
Yeah, the long stand. These girls thought it was a great idea for their products. So, and then after the first week, again, still at school. And basically John came to me at the end, John Deary, who actually owned the salon. I have to say the salon wasn't a huge difference to what we have in Molesworth Street. It was a Georgian building. It was right in the city centre. It was, you know, beside a lot of the older grand buildings around the city centre. He was an incredibly cool guy. He kind of looked like, if you can imagine John Lennon from the Imagine video.
Yeah, yeah.
White suit, beard, long hair, slightly going grey, drove a white Jaguar with white leather. And you know what I mean? So that was my first experience to, you know, the industry outside of my mum's salon and what salon she had. So it was kind of like a different type of salon. And he was an incredible guy. He basically, I suppose, encouraged me to actually leave Derry and go on. You know, I really, after the first week, I started working Saturdays. So I worked Saturdays through my last year of school while I was doing O-levels. Then at the end of the O-levels, you know, my dad would have wanted me to go on and do engineering. He was a chemical engineer, ran huge big plants for DuPont, and he traveled quite a bit around the world, but you know, no interest. I tried a bit of engineering on day release and stuff like that, just wasn't for me, no interest. And to be quite honest with you, you know, when I did the work experience, I was 15, so I kind of went, this is great. I was playing in a punk band. It would fit it in really beautifully with that, because I was already, you know, nicking products from my mum's salon for the band. you know, we were already, you know, bleaching each other's hair. And then in those days, you didn't have such thing as crazy color and stuff like that. So we were using like food coloring. So the way you got blue or red or whatever, or pink.
Pink, Mark. I remember that.
I think I had many, many different colors of hair. In fact, it had me barred from many distilleries around Dublin. You know, Dublin was still very conservative in those days.
I know. I remember. I was barred out of them all.
Yeah, and I'm still thinking it's maybe still quite conservative even today. Mm. But so I wrote to a couple of salons in London. Didn't really get any reply. My mum's originally from Dublin. So I kind of went to Dublin, and we were in Dublin most summers anyway. So I started just looking around salons, you know, and then basically ended up getting an interview with PM. And basically, I think that was, I was 16. So I'd finished school. May is my birthday. I was 16 when I did my O-levels.
It was about 84, 85, was it?
Yeah, and let me just think, yeah. Did the exams around May, June. So then, basically, I went full-time after that. And I would say by the following Easter, I basically decided, right, okay, Derry's too small. Need to get out of here. Need to just go and expand and basically find new avenues. You know how restless I am, Gregor.
I'm surprised you've lived where you have so long, and I'm surprised that just 25 that we're saying 25 years in the salon. It's just as well as dipping, you've a few flowers in it.
Actually, so am I. But the other side to it is we have moved around, but we'll get to that anyway.
I was Dundrum the first salon you worked in.
In Dublin, yeah. And here's the funny story about that. So I ended up coming to Dublin. I ended up getting this interview, and it was this with this incredible character called Dolores, who ran an induction course in North Earl Street. And I had actually come to Dublin, believe it or not, with the main intention to actually go and work in Marshalls. Mm. Because my heroes through my first boss, John Deary, were Trevor Sorby and Sassoon.
Yeah.
So he was obsessed, always going on courses to Sassoons and Sorbys and all the rest. So I had this in my mind with the whole lead in. So anyway, went, did the interview, and she asked me to do one weekend up in Grafton Street. So I was in Grafton Street first. Then the following weekend, or the following couple of days, I'm not quite clear, I ended up being asked, would I go to Dundrum, having no idea where Dundrum was. Remember, at that time, I was living over on Beaumont Road.
Yeah, yeah.
In my mum's old house. So, went to Dundrum, and to a very young, up-and-coming manager in those days, Mr. Liam Kennedy, who then basically pulled the fast one and basically told me that the only job that was going, even though the job I was actually going to was the Grafton Street job, but basically told me that the only job that was going was basically in Dundrum. And if I didn't take the Dundrum job,
there's no job.
There would be no job. So I kind of thought, you know what? I'll do this and I'll see how I get on. But I still had this idea of Marshalls and stuff and getting in the city centre and that sort of thing. So that was my first, you know, I suppose, my first kidnapping. so Liam pulled a fast one. But, you know, we've been great friends ever since. So it's been fantastic, you know.
Where I first encountered you then was when you were just about to be a junior stylist, and I had started Mary Street, and along we were told this fellow was coming in and doing drum. He was great with colour, and in comes this skinny, tall, skinny fella. Well, taller than me, and anyway, with pink hair. And at the time, I think I had a bleached flat top or something, and I just went, yeah, this kind of bloke that I'd like to hang around with. And then yourself and Paul became good friends, and the rest is history, should I say. But to me, you were a breath of fresh air then, but you knew it, this was a short landing for you, because you kind of, everybody knew that now you won't be here for long, and you moved on to Grafton Street. But then what I'd like to think is, because that was a flying visit as well as you were moving, but to me, I think you were probably one of the first youngest teachers in the Peter Mark Academy, as far as I can remember. You know?
And I'll explain to you how that came around. And again, even though I did get kidnapped by Liam Kennedy, he introduced me to probably the two most influential people in my hairdressing career. Number one, he sent me to London. He had the opportunity to go to London. I think it was for about 2 or 3 weeks to do this intensive colour degree. And, you know, we're talking in the 80s, Greg. This is, you know, this was unheard of. You know, you've got colour degree now, and you've got, you know, all these, you know, and then after that, you'd so many different avenues now for people that in those days you didn't.
Wow.
So I went, and I actually went, would you believe, there was two of us went. And the other young man who went was Paul, who originally set up House of Colour with his two partners.
Yeah, yeah. Paul Byrne.
Paul Byrne,
yeah.
You know, and myself and Paul were in London. And it was amazing, because we had 3 weeks intensive training with Pam Goff and her team. There was nobody else there. There was just us two and basically the technical people just being directed by Pam. So we were actually getting firsthand.
But probably I want to elaborate a little bit on that, Mark, because there's a lot of younger salon owners out here who wouldn't know who Pam Goff was.
Well, Pam.
Like, Pam Goff was like God.
Well, Pam.
You walked in. People, you know, you bowed when she came. That's how well she was held within the door of L'Oreal.
Pam Goff was L'Oreal's European technical director for the whole of Europe, not just for the UK and Ireland, for the whole of Europe. She was a colour technician, and you know, she's up there in the realms of the greatest colourists, you know, that ever come out of the UK. You know, you've got the Annie Humphreys of this world, Daniel Galvin, and there's Pam. You know, those are really, to me, those are the three big ones.
And the other thing I would add is that the others might have been great colourists, but I actually think she was one of the best educators I ever experienced. Yeah. You know, if you went to a seminar or trying to, you left knowing stuff, you know? She's just a great way of living it.
And to be quite honest, she was a huge influence on my life. Mm. And then after that, after I had done and continued to work, and then after that, I would actually go to London every year over for, you know, a recap and a refresher and so on and so forth. And then the other person that basically put a huge stamp on me in those days was a gentleman called Adrian Kalansky. Now, funny, here's the funny story. Adrian arrived over in Dublin also to work for Marshalls because the link up with Sassoon's, and basically Adrian ended up getting, you know, for want of a better way, hijacked by PM to head up their academy. So what happened then was I was so obsessed with education, that I basically harassed Liam into making it possible that I could go into the education center on my day off on a Monday every week. to work under Adrian. So I did that for 2 years on my day off. So
I remember another guy doing that when you were in there.
Yeah.
Me.
So it was intense. And basically, the only cutting classes I ever had at that stage of my career were with Adrian on a Monday. And that was every Monday, every single Monday. So for those years as an assistant, I was, for all intents and purposes, immersed in it 6-7 days a week. Because what I did was, whatever haircut I worked with on Adrian on a Monday, I would spend that entire week doing that haircut, just grabbing everybody I possibly could.
The amazing thing was then, Mark, you weren't doing them on mannequins.
No.
On real people.
No.
And weird. If you were in your first or second year, you were kind of told you have to wear these haircuts.
And the other side to it is whether anybody wanted it or not, anybody who wanted a free haircut got whatever haircut I was working on that week. End of story. So that's basically the way it was. I hate to say it, it's not where we've evolved to these days, but it was certainly, you know, there was a big change in how things were happening. Haircutting was becoming a lot more fluid. It was less structured. There was a lot of things happening in the industry, and I was just immersed in it. And it was the only thing I could think about in those days.
So you became a trainer, right? Then you got the buzz to move again, and you decide to head off to London to give up being a hairdresser as per se, as behind the chair, and become an educator with L'Oreal.
Yeah. Well, prior to doing that as well, so we'll keep it in the time zones. Mm. So basically, after I'd done that, and after I'd, you know, met yourself and got to hang out with yourself and all the rest, I basically went to London for a while to work. Then I came back. So we are on the right timeline. Then I came back, and then basically I became an educator with Adrian. So the two of us were educators in the academy. And then after that, I had a very short-lived experience as a manager up on one of the Grafton Street salons. You know, it really wasn't for me at that time.
No.
And to be quite honest with you, it wasn't for me at that time because I was 21, 22. I didn't have the temperament. I'm a no bullshit type of guy at the best of times. And, you know, there was just too much, you know, interference, and you weren't actually able to get on and do the job that you needed to do at the time. So to be quite honest with you, what happened then is I actually went and opened a salon up north.
Was that before the technician job?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. Fine. Yeah. Yeah. So I got my timelines mixed then. That's your first salon of your own.
So, yeah, that was my first salon. So I was like early 20s, decided that this was something to do, went and did it. In hindsight, would I have done it again? Probably not. Because even though it was successful, and even though I was, believe it or not, doing a lot of education for L'Oreal at this time, like I was doing stupid stuff like finishing work on a Saturday night in the salon in Derry and maybe getting in the car to do a seminar in Cork on a Sunday afternoon. So there was a lot of, you know, I'm still involved in education. And do you know what? I was in my early 20s and it had nothing to do with the business, but I just felt unfulfilled. I know that's kind of sounds mad, but I always started off and going into the industry as somebody who was very focused on trying to be the best at what I could be. I didn't want to be anybody else. I didn't want to be Vidal Sassoon or Trevor Sorby or anything else. I, in my head, I had it that I needed to be the best that I could be.
Yeah.
And at that point, I thought owning a salon was restricting me in what I needed to do. So basically, I approached L'Oreal and I said, listen, I want to come and work for you guys. And I, as I say, I was already doing education for L'Oreal at the time. And to be quite honest with you, it wasn't as straightforward as that. You know, it was flying into London. It was doing interviews with a panel and, you know, with Pam Goff sitting in the middle of it and with other technical managers there. It was, I had to do two presentations. And then after that, I think it was down to two or three of us. And then we had to come in to the technical center for a day in London. And then I think out of the two or three of us, I think two of us got the positions.
And then, right, so we're going to microwave up and we're going to bring you up to, you came back to Dublin, but you didn't come, you come back as a technician.
Yeah, so, I spent.
When did it, you know, it's ready for me now to get my own thing again. I need to get my own.
I spent 5 years with L'Oreal.
Mm.
And I had an amazing time and yet again, another amazing person in my life, Ivan Beshoff, made it difficult for me. I probably stayed a year longer than I should have.
Yeah.
And I stayed a year longer than I should have because of my admiration for Ivan and the work that he did and the relationship that we had. So I probably stayed about a year longer than I would have. But in saying that, in that year, I was the first Irish person to win Technician of the Year.
Like, I think we were very lucky, I think, to have experienced the people like Pam Goff and Ivan, because I don't think there'll ever be a company like L'Oreal will ever have an Ivan. There'll never be another Ivan again. And he was just a unique man and he was just such a gentleman, you know?
The other thing, it's like everything I say, and I say to young people coming into the industry, you have to know what it is that you want. You have to understand the people who have the gifts or the knowledge that you need to get to bring you to whatever level you want to get to. And it's up to you to go out and seek those people and basically learn and basically evolve within the industry and actually try and bring yourself to the next level. You know, I have seen so many, many, many wonderful kids come into the industry with great potential only to basically fall because they haven't got that extra drive to push you over the edge. For example, it would have been easier when I opened the first salon to continue doing my work with L'Oreal at weekends and doing the seminars and doing the education. And, you know, other companies were looking for me to do stuff, but I always had an affinity with the people in L'Oreal. And I needed to basically develop. So I needed to search out and find things where it would bring me to the next level. I never made a move for financial reasons. And looking back on it, I actually think to myself, you know, why did you do, for example, my first salon was very successful and I was making plenty of money. You came up to visit. I had a 5-bedroom detached house. I was driving a nice sports car, blah, 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 blah. I thought, no, this is not for me. I need to move. I need to do this. So again, probably at financial loss, I went, right, I got to do it. And I went and I did it. And I have to say, it was...
You're quite impulsive, Mark, aren't you?
Yes.
I can tell a story about your partner of the time saying she sent you out to get milk one day and you come back with a flat, well, with a television. It wouldn't have been flat screen then, but you come back.
No, actually, I went out to get groceries and milk, and I came back with a drum kit.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. I came back with a drum kit.
So,
and basically,
get into the birth of Kasumi. You know, like you had it, like as you, I think we're getting a trend where we can see where when Mark gets it into his head for something, well, it doesn't matter how good what he has is there. That's gone now. I'm on to the next thing. So you were at the top, you know, you were flying high with L'Oreal at the time. I remember it well. And then I remember you kind of opening my own shop, you know, and we went up to see and you knew you had a plan, you knew where you wanted to be. So elaborate a little bit on how that came about.
Again, hindsight, it probably could have been done with a little bit more thought and detail. Remember, I'm coming back, and I had a partner at the very, very beginning, and coming back into it, I had no clients. I was coming off working for L'Oreal for 5 years. Nobody per se in Dublin knew who the hell I was. You know, let's be real. You know, having the industry, knowing who you are, and basically the general public are two completely different things. And basically having to start from scratch. I mean, it was incredibly tough. And it was incredibly tough when the first partnership at the very beginning actually went separate ways. And then basically I was left thinking, okay, well, what do we do now? You know, again, moving from a situation where I'd been with L'Oreal for 5 years, where it was, you know, comfortable, you know, you didn't really have to worry about finances. You didn't have to worry about anything else. To be quite honest with you, out of a 20 working day a month, I was away 15 nights of pretty much every month, staying in hotels and all the rest. So you weren't really spending money, you know what I mean? You were through the company because you were actually working all the time. You're working 6-7 days a week. So that was, I would say if I was to change anything, I would have planned that out a bit better. Hmm. But if nothing else, I am resilient.
I don't know if it's the right word, but it was a boutique salon. It was very cute, it was very original, but it was in a great location as regards once you have good clientele there, you're gonna pick off.
You know. Absolutely. So we were literally off South Ann Street. We were next door to Dublin's first Thai restaurant that practically opened at the same time, called the Chili Club. So it became quite a hip little area. And there was some boutiques moved in as well. Now they didn't last, but they were there for the first couple of years. So it was kind of like a funky little area, and it was an area that was you know going through a little bit of a renaissance, and small boutique businesses, and I just really took it from there. I mean, at one point I was actually there was me and a junior after the initial split, I think, and then of course joined by my longtime collaborator, Miss Jenny Crawford, who came on board, and then from there, you know, it just grew.
So then, if now that you've looked, because you've kind of touched on it a little bit there, if you were to go back to the first Kasumi, you know what I mean, the South Ann Street. Now, would you do something? What would you do differently? You know what I mean? Was it the right size? Was it the wrong time to go in with the partner? Because maybe off camera, the partnership wasn't great and it wasn't the right time to go in, or?
You know, it's just, the other side to it is I don't really look at things like that and go, how would I have changed them? For the simple reason that where I probably am today, everything that has happened between then and now has basically molded where we are and part of company and the sort of business that we are.
Probably the best way to me put that to you would be if somebody was to come to it and said, I'm going to do with Salon Mark, what's the one piece of advice you'd give me? And if you think back to when you started, say, this is the nugget for you. No.
Well, you were basically, number one, you'd plan it out a little bit more. You would certainly, with the advent of social media, you would do a little bit more of a campaign. You would get yourself up and running a bit more. You would actually try and make sure that the people, to try and bring people on board that are basically of like mind. And the other side to that, that probably maybe have a little bit of business to actually start the business, which is what everybody does. But as you know, and I make no bones about this, business is not easy.
No
matter what advice you get, business is not easy. And I keep saying this to a lot of young people who are like, yeah, I want a salon. And I say, anybody can have a salon. You can have a salon in a room. A salon, if you want to actually condense and boil it all down, a salon is a room with some fixtures and fittings, an area where you can actually shampoo your clients, and an area for bathroom and another, whether it be cloakroom, staff room, or whatever. But essentially, you can boil it down. It's a room. It's a simple room. So you have to think about, how can I actually turn a room into a business? And that's really what it's all about. It's not easy. It's very easy to set up a room. But when the tax man comes calling in 12 or 18 months and you haven't been up to date with stuff, your room is now closed. Mm. It's as simple as that. You know, there are two sides to the wonderful industry that we're in. There is a business side and there is a creative side. And because you're good at one doesn't make you good at the other. And that works both ways. You know, that, you know, there's some wonderful hairdressers that I've worked with over the years and have tried and failed on the salon end of things. That doesn't mean that they're not great and they're not brilliant at what they do. It's got nothing to do with that. It's a different discipline. So my advice to anybody coming who wants to open a salon is, are you going to be disciplined? Mm. Are you going to basically learn from A to Z how to run a business? Because everything is online now, by the way, Greg. You know what I mean? It was different when we started out. When I started out in business, you had to rely on people like L'Oreal to maybe give you an overview of good business practice, for want of a better word. Not how to run your business, but good business practice. Nowadays, it's there's a lot more information out there. And the one thing that I always say, whether it's especially to people who are coming into the industry, in fact, coming into any industry, I say it to my own son as well. Go and talk to the people who have the information that you need. Yeah. Okay. Talk to the people who can help you and actually develop whatever it is that you need. I basically have friends of mine from all different professions, whether it be law, accountancy, building, whatever. And the one thing that they all have in common, they basically look and they seek out people who are successful in the area that they are in. And they take advice from people who are successful in the area that they are in. To any young people, I would suggest that you talk to people, whatever, if it's a hairdressing industry, you talk to successful hairdressers. Whether that's a
success. I've always said that is, you know, successful people leave clues and they leave them in abundance. You just be following behind them and picking up on them, you know, and it's a fact that, you know, you have to decide what you really want. And I think with our industry, in a nutshell, is do you want to be self-employed or do you want to own a business? That's the difference. Right. Self-employed is a realm, as you say.
Yes.
It's a whole different industry. You know?
And here's the other thing about it is, number one, first of all, I had no choice but to go down this route. The reason being is I'm actually probably unemployable. And I'm not being funny about that. I'll be quite honest. I am the sort of guy who is probably unemployable. So I needed to go and learn skills. And I went and I learned skills from people who know and have those skills. And I got those skills off them. I mean, even at this stage of my career, I still feel I have more to learn now than I did as a teenager. I don't feel people find this, it's a bit blasé. I don't feel I'm any more successful than I was when I was 19 or 20. And I really mean that. And I'm not belittling the time that I've spent within the industry. But in my head, that's the way I am. I don't feel that at any time I've kind of rested. What I have a tendency to do, and I think it's probably part of my personality, is I diversify a lot. Mm. I can go down one tangent and then I can change and I can go down another tangent. And I have no issue with that. We all fear change. Everybody fears change. God, I fear change. I'll give you an example. Education is moving online. I'm actually really uncomfortable with that idea. Mm. You know, I have to get it into my head that that's where the future is for education, for how we need to be doing things in the future. Not necessarily everything online, but set me along.
Times we're in now at the moment.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I've actually, believe it or not, in where we operate, Alison, my wife, who you know really well, done a Zoom this morning. Now, before she would have done it, it was her doing some work on a mannequin and the assistants watching. And I said, Alison, I've just finished the book, The Talent Code. There's so much of that will be forgotten because they're physically not going through the process. So what we did is got the mannequins out to them and the stands. And instead this morning, she showed, they done. So, and I just felt it was going so much. There was so much information being fired. And I'm kind of going, that's just going straight through them. They need to physically do the act.
Exactly.
And you have to have a way that they physically get their hands to touch the hair, to touch it. And if it means for the moment, it's sending them a mannequin to their home, well, then that's what we do, you know? So I would agree with your hands down on that, you know?
Yeah. So, but here's the thing. That's something I'm going to have to just deal with, you know? But, you know, it wouldn't be for the first time in my life that, you know, you kind of go, oh, you know, this is, you know, the first time you do anything in the industry, it's a little bit, you know, startling and uncomfortable and something that you don't want to do, but you just got to go and do it, you know?
It's like me doing this. Part of the reason I've done this is because I missed meeting you out at an event or other people, having a beer and swapping ideas, getting inspired. The days you felt a little bit, Jesus, it's a bit overwhelming. Then you go to an event, you meet somebody and they go, and then you come back in the next day and you're buzzed up again. And I just felt, well, let's find a way that I can get people to connect again, because we are very social animals, hairdressers, without doubt. You know what I mean? And we like meeting each other and we're good in our own zone with our own people. So what I want to ask you now, the big question is, based on your travels, work on both sides of the coin as a in salon and, you know, outside for a product company, what do you feel makes an amazing salon?
Oh, listen, it's very simple. I used to, again, it's like your journey. It's like your journey. What I thought would make an amazing salon 20 years ago is not what I think makes an amazing salon today. Yeah. So what I always felt what makes an amazing salon is staff, first of all. But here's where it changes. 20 years ago, I would have told you that only the greatest staff that basically work the walk the surface of the earth are the staff that I want to work around me, right? Now, I want great people who are great at their job, but are also people who want to, the word isn't fit in, but add to the environment that the salon is. Do you understand what I mean by that?
You're making a contribution.
So making the area, whatever the area is in your salon square footage, you know, in Moser Street, it's 4,500 square foot over five floors, but it's making all of that area comfortable and a perfect environment for clients to come into, feel welcome, and also get the service and the product that basically they expect So really, it comes down to your people. It comes down to your staff. I mean, I am quite honestly so lucky to work with some really wonderful people, and I know you know quite a few of them. You know, Brian, Jenny, Jackie. You know, a great management team of Noreen and Elaine, and basically great colorists, you know, Sean, Emma, you know, and newer staff that have joined us that are just fantastic and add to the experience. Add to the experience, not just for the clients, but for themselves. Because when people are happy in the environment that they work in, when they're happy in the environment that they actually work in, it makes for a wonderful environment for everybody to experience what a wonderful salon is. But here's the other thing. Do they have to be of a certain standard? Absolutely. It has to be what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
So no matter what level you're working at, and I say this to no cup of coffee, no magazine, no newspaper, no bottle of champagne, no bottle of Prosecco will make up for bad work, for rude people, for badly dressed people in a horrible environment. Okay? So that is it in a nutshell. So all those little things that have come into the industry are basically come in second place to the team of people that you basically want to have working with you and who you want to work with. Vitally important.
Well, I mean, thank you. And it's going to lead into the next question is, and I'm sure you'll hit me with some of them. So I would look and say, one thing I would feel, most people, since hair salons are closed, what they're missing most is the people.
Yeah.
It's not the Prosecco, it's not the cup of coffee. So when we were out reopening the doors, nobody said, well, can I not have a coffee? Can I have this? Can I have that? No, they didn't care. They wanted to come in and interact, have their hair done, because the hair is what they originally came for, but it was the connection. And I think that's where, if you have a good salon, that's what's really coming through from the good salons, is the empathy and the feeling, the love from the people that used your building or your room, as you say, for more than just a haircut.
It's all about the experience. All about the experience. You can have whatever frilly bits, and you know, I said this to you before, Greg. You know this. 25 years ago, when we opened the salon, we had a full bar 6 days a week. You know, if you wanted champagne or Prosecco, and in those days it was Cava. It wasn't Prosecco. It was Cava, or on special occasions you had champagne, but there was always wine. There was always anything else. In fact, in those days, particularly on a Thursday evening, I would actually probably leave the salon at maybe 8 o'clock, go across the queues, have a couple of pints, and basically come back and lock the salon up at maybe 10 o'clock, 10:30, because there'd be clients still there having a sociable, you know, gathering particularly on a Thursday night, you know. And that's what you're looking for. You're not necessarily looking for the reasons they're there. It's all about the experience that they have within the four walls.
Yeah. So you're looking at the crazy year we've had, right? Probably the weirdest year any of us have experienced, no matter how long you're in the industry. Because the sessions, as you say, well, look, if you're around a long time, probably been through a few of them. For our generation, we've never been through this, and hopefully generations to come won't either. We have to look at the glass half full moments. So in the last year, the strange year as it was, what are the things that you feel will make Mark a better person? Or, do you know what, in hindsight now, looking at my life or looking at my business, I wouldn't have looked at it if this hadn't have happened in this way.
I don't really do half full or half empty. I'm pretty full on all the time. It's the glass is always full, and I don't mean that in the sense of a beer or a, you know, we are here for one time and one time only. You have to make use of the time you have on this planet. I don't do the oh, I'm feeling down or whatever. For me, this year and the close downs have all been about a reboot. Mm. It's about reboot the business, reboot the energy for the staff, reboot our connections with our clients, and basically reboot, you know. Suzanne turned around and says to me, and you know Suzanne, my better half, you know, the one that actually can keep me in control at times.
At last.
And she says to me last weekend, the last Paddy's weekend, which when we were all about to close down, you're very calm. And I said, I can only be wired up about things I can control.
Yeah.
Because as you know, I'm a control freak as well. And I have no control over this. So I have to look at this in the big picture, and I have to see how can this benefit the business? How can this benefit the staff? How can this benefit us as a company moving forward? And the only way to do that is to actually reboot. And we've been very strong on keeping contact with our clients. I'm in the salon every 2 or 3 days sending out orders for shampoo or whatever. Again, it's not for financial gain. It's to keep that lifeline open with the clients, to keep them informed, to keep them, you know, a touching distance, even though we can't see them.
And I think it's appreciated, Mark. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think we do have a fear that the longer we're out, that these clients won't. My outlook is, look, people have short memories. And if we get the vaccine in place and this rolls out, in 12 months' time, people will want the experience of going back to a salon. Why? Because it's nice. It's nice, you know? So
if you want to ask me about what's going on out there with the home hairdressing and all the rest, I'm going to explain. It's very simple. People will do what they do, and we have no control over that. No matter how much we whine about it and all the rest, it's not going to change. But the one thing that will actually happen is the salon experience is becoming more cemented in the client's heads now. And even if they do get a little sneaky job done while we're closed, the environment that you create for them to come into will always be a stronger pull than somebody being in your home. Now, the one thing I will say, I don't even know how this is going to come out. I basically think that the more astute and the more sensible client won't have anybody in their home.
Yeah.
I would not have anybody in my home. You know, it's as simple as that. I don't mean for hair. I mean for anything, you know. So why would you invite somebody into your home who's going to somebody else's home, who's going to somebody else's home, who's having contact with, you know, it's really not really very smart. As well as that, we've also had a rise in the so-called self-employed hairdresser.
Mm.
The thing about that is, and I touched on it earlier, you have to be very focused to be a salon owner. You have to be very focused to be self-employed. Because self-employed people will get to a year, year and a half, 2 years, and then Mr. Revenue will arrive at the door. And he's looking for his money. And you have to get him his money. It actually becomes more and more difficult the longer you're an independent, as in a singular person working within the industry as a single person. The gloss goes off it very, very quickly. The gloss goes off it very, very quickly. I've known many people who have been independents and done their self-employed thing. They always end up coming back into the industry. So I actually think after this, I think that's what's going to happen. I think you're going to see people coming back to the industry.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do hope so, because I think you're right there, Mark. You know, the reason they, if you actually look back to the beginning, when you ask most, hey, why did you come in? It's when they came into it, they love being around the atmosphere of a salon, the people, it's a rock star lifestyle, isn't it? Without the rock star frappings, probably. But it's the nearest thing I feel. When somebody said to me, why did you want to go? Well, at 15, I want to be a footballer. By 16, I realized that wasn't going to happen. For 17, 18, I thought I want to be a rock star. Then I realized that my voice wasn't that great and I didn't play an instrument. Right. Then I drifted, happened to drift into a hair salon. And I went, wow, this is an amazing place, and people pay, and basically your fans, people come back and ask for you. It's massage.
We have an amazing open door policy in the salon. I never close the door on anybody. Well, there's maybe one or two exceptions, but to be quite honest with you, we have a number of staff who left and went off and they did their own thing and have actually come back and are working for the company, and it's fantastic. I love to see it, and it basically, you know, it's good, and they have a tendency to enjoy it second time around.
Yeah, it's the one thing I drilled into my own kids is if you're leaving somewhere, leave with dignity and leave with respect for that person, and make sure the door has left the jar behind you that you can walk with your head back in, with your head held high. Don't have doors closed behind you, because the simple reason is you never know when you need them, you know? And I think a lot of people sometimes, you know, as you say, there's a way of leaving a business and going and doing your own thing. And at the time, you know, I've always said, if somebody came to me, I always say to my own team, if you're ever thinking of opening, come and talk to me first. I might be able to help you. You know what I mean? The only way you'll ever fall out with me is one, if you try and rip my business apart that I've took a long time to build, or you try and go direct head to head with me, which is something I didn't do when I left PM. Why? Because the PM are good for me. I wouldn't have got where I was without, I wouldn't have met you, I wouldn't have met Paul Drumgool, I wouldn't have gone to London and met Pam Goff. You know what I mean? So always show respect for the people that got you to where you are. And I think that's come across in a lot of these interviews, that people respect the people that have helped them. And probably the doors behind them are ajar because of the way they behaved when they moved on, you know? So the last question I want to ask you, Mark, is, none of us have a crystal ball, but we all have plans and we all have aspirations. So what would you like the future to hold for you over the next 12 months? You know what I mean? Which, when I started doing these 12 months ago, a lot of them probably would have thought differently, but it's an ever-changing toy that we have, you know?
Do you know what? My first focus is number one, always, and I try to keep in touch with the staff as much as possible, is number one, the well-being of all the team. I think that's an imperative. If we can come back together as a group and as a team, and we're basically, you know, we've got through this, and we look forward to what the future brings. And the future can bring, you know, I see a good future ahead. There's many things. I think our client base has basically been exceptional. I would say the vast majority of clients have come back to us after the last two lockdowns. I think we appreciate their loyalty. I think they appreciate our loyalty. It's very much a two-way street. Again, everybody's well-being is an imperative at this moment in time. I think where education is going, I think there's a couple of different fronts. I think the idea that there's going to be a recognized training system, you know, coming into the country, I think is a good basic bottom line standard that we can, I mean, we're always going to add to it. It's as simple as that. For us, it'll be a nice embedded standard, and then we can actually add on the education that we need to bring them up.
The nice thing I'd like to have with that, Mark, is that some poor kid that comes in and starts at a certain level, you know, that minimum standard, that if they get to the stage like you or I, and it's time to move on, that they know that that door could be open for them, because they're able to say, well, look, this is the level I've got to, instead of you looking and going, you look like a lovely kid and I'd love to take you on, but honestly, I can't put you back into your second year where you should be, because the law won't allow me. But at least if you can say, well, actually, if there's a minimum standard, you've got to do this, this, and this. But unfortunately, you and I know that some salons take training seriously and some people employ people to sweep floors.
Exactly. That's it. So, and as well as that, I know from even some of my own team who have been in contact with me, and I'm trying to keep in contact with everybody, they're already working on some stuff, some projects that they want to do for shoots, for online education. They're already working on that. They're actually sending me some updates. So I'm very excited to see what they're doing.
Well, I was actually delighted. I know Jenny well. To see Jenny making up player pieces in our living room last week, and I kind of go, there you go. Successful people leave clues. Look what Jenny's doing in our downtime. She's not. I'm sure she's watching the telly, having our Guinness now and again. But eventually, she's drawn back to. I need to get my hands into what makes my living. You know.
And like last week, myself and Jackie were on doing a day's training with the Redken team. So all the guys, you know, Chris Moody, Keith Owen, Toby. So we're all online doing all our online education as well. I know she's very excited about that. It was a fantastic day's education. So I think when we open back up again and we basically get through the avalanche of the first couple of months, I think it's going to be very positive for our industry moving forward.
Yeah.
And I know you were on the call last week when the two of us were listening into the Sean Dawson interview. And Sean was basically saying everything that, you know, I can actually concur with is, you know, about independent people are, it's now getting to the stage where people need to be working with other groups of people. People need to be parts of teams.
Yeah.
People are finding it difficult in the UK, for example, to be on their own, to be an independent, to be a, you know, rent a chair or whatever. There is, you know, pluses to it, but there's a huge downside to it as well. So I think we're going to have a lot more people. And I also believe we're going to have a lot more people coming into the industry at a younger level, because I think the days, and I believe the days of young people jumping to four or five different jobs are over. I think those days are gone. I think there's nobody, you know, the first thing I do now, and I look at the CV that comes in the door, if somebody's had four jobs and they're 21 or they're 20, and they've had four jobs, you know, over the last 3 years, they're really not somebody that you want to be even having a conversation with. So I think that's going to change. I think people are going to actually have time to think about what it is that they want to do. There's only so many people who can be influencers. There's only so many people who can make money out of it. There's only so many people who can actually put a song up on TikTok and actually think that they're going to actually get a musical career out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The simple fact of the matter is, yes.
It's like some random fella putting a saxophone music up, isn't it?
Well, you know what I mean? I've actually been watching all his videos.
It's the way you beat yourself up, Mark. Put it out there to be abused.
Absolutely.
And then eventually have people come back to you and say, actually, you're not getting bad. You're not getting there. And that's what I've always said to people. Whatever you have in your head, get it out there in the open. Don't sit on it and then look back in years to come and say, why didn't I? You know? And you're definitely somebody that I would put down as a, you know, if he has an idea, he'll go for it, you know?
So the other side to it is, you know, and I think somewhere down the road, there has to be a clear vision for the industry. Hmm. It's very divided. I you know my thoughts on it. I don't get involved with things for the simple reason that I just think there's too much haphazardness within the industry. And we should be leading the industry from within. I'm not a great believer in waiting around for product companies to basically tell us where we should be as an industry.
Yeah.
I'm a great believer that the people within the industry should be leading the industry. I don't think we should be led. And for too many years, I believe that's been happening. So I think, you know, if anything, certainly that's where my head is moving forward.
Yeah, and look, Mark, you need the people to be the pin in the cushion. And that's where your strength is. You're good at people what they should and shouldn't be doing. You know what I mean? And as you said, unemployable. Yeah, man. Now, sitting on a committee is probably not your thing. You know what I mean? Probably not your thing.
I probably have way too many pins to stick in people.
So that's our 7 at 7 done. And look, it's been great catching up, and we're always in touch. And you know what I mean? To me, it was just trying to talk to you and get the story out because it's a story that I've watched over the years. And as I said, you're one of my earliest mentors and still a great friend today and will continue to be because we haven't fallen out now. We're never going to whether it be on hair, football, or any political situation. Actually, politically wise, we're probably very similar in that sense. Football wise, we're miles apart, but I think we're getting mellow in our old age. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, we definitely are on that front.
Oh, yeah. We definitely are. So, do you want to say goodbye to everybody out there?
Listen, everybody, listen, enjoy the last few days of your, or should I say weeks of your downtime, because we're going to be back pretty soon. Hopefully, we're going to be back in early mid-April, maybe.
Well, this is probably not going out till the end of March.
Isn't
that? Well, no, it'll be another couple of weeks, so we're looking at into March, but we're very clear now that we're not open until April by the looks of things.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So, but hopefully we're definitely being by, certainly being by May.
You know, so what I'm going to say to everybody out there is have a great time getting ready for be back to work until another hump of the week. All I want to say is may the Hair Force be with you until we meet again.
Thank you for listening to Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters, Hump of the Week 7 at 7 archive interview with Mark McCauley of Kasumi Hair Salon. If you've enjoyed the interviews, please like, share and subscribe to our channels and our pages. We look forward to hearing from you and we look forward to you giving us a 5-star review. So keep the faith and see you all again soon. Take care.